Hi everyone, happy Thursday, happy St. Patrick's Day for those of you who are celebrating. My name is Allie McGregor and I'm back again this evening for a very special reason, and that is to interview one of the contributors to the 31 Days of MS campaign. Now, if you are following this page, you're probably aware that March is MS Awareness Month, and to acknowledge that event, every year, MS News Today publishes 31 stories, one story every single day of the month on our website. And these are stories from patients, patient advocates, researchers, caregivers, lots of different perspectives from people who have been touched by MS in some way. So if you haven't had a chance yet, I strongly encourage you to go to our website, multiplesclerosisnewstoday.com, and click on the icon that says 31 Days of MS. Or you should be able to click the link in the description of this video. I've provided a little promotional link here, so if you're so inclined, you can click directly from this video after this interview is finished, or even right now if you'd like to catch up on the stories. But I do hope that you will stick around for this conversation. Tonight, I'm going to be joined by our Day 10 contributor. Her name is Carolyn Hines. I'm very excited to talk to Carolyn. As I mentioned, her story was published on day 10, so March 10th, just a little bit, about a week ago. So if you haven't had a chance to check out her story, please go check it out after this interview. If you've read her story and you want to get to know her a little better, we're so happy that you're here. So thank you to everyone who's watching. So Carolyn, before we get started, where are you joining us from this evening?
I'm in Toronto.
Oh, okay. So we are probably pretty close to each other right now. That's cool. Before you joined, I was asking folks
where are you?
Who are watching. I'm not really in Toronto. I'm in Mississauga. If you're from the GTA, you'll know what that means.
Okay. Yeah, I'm actually in Scarborough, but I always say Toronto because, you know, I'm still in the GTA.
Exactly. I say the same thing. So Carolyn, tell us a little bit about yourself. What do you do? What are some things you enjoy doing for fun? A little bit about yourself.
I'm a film critic, or what I like to say, a film culture critic. I'm a podcaster and YouTuber. And my main thing is writing and talking about films and TV shows. And I do that, and I watch so many of them for fun and also for work. When I'm not doing that, when I'm not watching TV, I'm playing with my dog, Kyoko. If I was back home in Barbados, I would say going to the beach. But since I'm very, very far from Barbados, I'm very, very far from the beach, I can't say that. So my main thing is watching TV and keeping myself entertained.
Oh, that's awesome. How long have you been passionate about being a critic? Like, is this like something that you started when you were a lot younger, like in childhood, or a passion you discovered later on?
It's something I've always loved talking about films. Like, I grew up watching TV and watching films as not only a cultural thing, because in Barbados, like, watching films and TV and going to the cinema is a very big part of our culture. But like, I just grew up watching films and on Sundays with my mom and my older brother and my twin sister. That's like something we always did together. So I always grew up watching TV and I always loved talking about it. But I moved to Canada in 2009 and I didn't start out doing film criticism then. I got my high school diploma because I had been out of school for well over 15 years when I moved here. So I had to get my high school diploma. Then I went to college to get my diploma in paralegal studies. And I did that. I did the whole course. I got my diploma and I got it. And it was just like, I was diagnosed with MS. So the MS is actually what prompted me to pursue film criticism, because I knew that being a paralegal would be a very stressful job, and stress is one of my symptomatic triggers. Like, stress literally does trigger some of my symptoms. And I remember when I first got my diagnosis, one of the first things my doctor told me, my neurologist, he said, try to avoid stress as much as possible. He's like, life is stressful, but like, try not to put yourself in situations where you will be stressed out. And one of the reasons he told me that was like, before I got my official diagnosis in 2017, I had been in school the same all life. It took 2.5 years to get me test to get like the diagnosis. I've been doing testing for 2.5 years, and during that time I was in school. And while I was in school, I actually had a a relapse while I was in school. So I had surgery for fibroids. I had a myomectomy in 2015, and then after that, I went back to school. But then, like 2 or 3 months later, I had a relapse. Like one side of my face was paralyzed and like completely numb from like literally the right side of my face down across my chest, and my right arm was numb. And I was out of school for a few months. And my doctor, he said, was like, he was like, basically your body was under stress and it kind of triggered that. And that made me really think long and hard about if doing paralegal as a profession would be healthy for me. So well, after I got the diagnosis in April of 2017, I really decided, I'm like, I'm gonna do so I'm I can't do I'm like, I know I can't become a paralegal, so I'm going to do something that I've always wanted to do, which is film criticism and talking about films and TVs and writing about them. So that's how I became a film critic. I kind of took it the long way across, but it's kind of like, for me, like being a film critic is actually tied in to my MS, because it was the diagnosis that prompted me to actually finally pursue it. It's something I had secretly always wanted to do, but I never told anyone. And then I was just like, you know what? Life is short. I got this disease that is like slowly eating away at me, so I'm gonna do something that makes me happy while I can. So there, and so that's why I became a film critic. And then I started doing film festivals. I've been going to TIFFs and that, South by Southwest, the Real Asian Film Festival. I've been covering a whole bunch of film festivals. And I have a podcast. I have three podcasts actually, where I talk about films and TV shows in of varying degrees and of different genres. With I have a co-host for Sir Here's What Happened, and two other podcasts that I host myself. And I started a YouTube channel during the pandemic, because it was I've always wanted to make be, being a doing YouTube as part of my film criticism. So I started that my YouTube channel last year. So that's what I'm doing now. That's part of what keeps me busy. It's hard, it's not easy, but I love it.
Wow, you seem like such a positive person, and I love hearing that finding out that like getting your diagnosis actually pushed you in a direction of something that you love for a career. When with so many people, sometimes it takes their career or their interests away from them. So that's a very positive story. You mentioned in your story, and again, folks, if you'd like to read Carolyn's story, it's day 10 on our website. That there's another symptom that really affects you, and that is the cognitive impairment. For the folks who are watching, can you describe that a little bit for them?
So cognitive impairment is where like your cognition is literally impaired, and it affects your thinking, your ability to process information, whether it's reading or speech or hearing. It's about if it's like it can affect your speech, which it does for me. Like sometimes I slur my words, I mix up my words, and then like talking now, like a sentence, I know what I want to say, but I can't. I'm trying to find the words to say is hard. And it and for me, it's tied to depression as well. Like depression actually triggers cog fog. But then it's also about finding things that I forget where I put things, or I have like short-term and long-term memory loss. And when you have a cog fog episode, like the most common description that people have, it feels like you have cotton wool or cotton candy in your brain, and that you literally can't think, and it's like trying to find your way through a fog, and you're processing speed with just finding information. Like you know that you know things, but your brain just can't bring the knowledge to the front of your brain, like where you need it. And for me, that's probably been one of the most consistent symptoms of my MS. Like I do have, you know, like the standard, the tingling, the numbness, like problems walking. Like like even like when it was today, like walking my dog and stuff, like I was having trouble like keeping my, not my balance, but I noticed that I started like I wasn't walking in a straight line. Like I start to like go off. And for me, for my cog fog, like that actually makes exacerbates those kind of symptoms. Like it makes it hard to realize when you're doing something wrong. And it can vary, just like MS, like varies person to person. I think for cognition and for cognitive impairment, it can affect different people. So I have mild cognitive impairment, which means it's not as severe as like as it can get. But for me, like I had written in my piece, like for me, that just being considered mild has affected me a lot, especially as a writer, because as a writer, I do need to be able to process information. As a critic, when I'm watching films, I need to be able to focus on what I'm watching so that when it comes time to write a review or an article, I need to remember what I was what I thought of the film and like be able to process the information that I'm receiving from what I'm seeing. But with my juridical clock, that can be kind of hard, you know. Like I like I've noticed like my hearing has decreased, and I'll a character might say something, and I'm like, well, I literally would forget what they said. And like when I'm going to have a clock fog episode, like I will be having a conversation with someone, and I would forget like the beginning of the conversation. I don't have any recollection of the conversation. I like I'll be just like, I know I said something, but I don't remember what it was I said. So that's how the cognitive impairment like manifests for me.
Yeah, that sounds very frustrating and very challenging. So I want to go back actually a little bit to like before you got your diagnosis. And when you were diagnosed, your doctor mentioned that you need to avoid stress. So my first question is, did you make a connection between the symptoms that you were experiencing and stress before you were diagnosed? And my second question is, did you also experience cognitive impairment as one of those early symptoms and then later realized it's a symptom of MS?
So the thing was before I got the official diagnosis, like I said, it took 2.5 years. And one of the reasons that I even thought that something was possibly wrong was how I got my diagnosis was I had fallen and hit my head on ice. I was tobogganing with my friend and her kids, and I fell and hit my head on ice, and I was sick. I was like, you know, like I had a concussion. So I went to the doctor and he was examining me. And he diagnosed me with, he's like, you have a severe concussion. But while he was examining me, he noticed that my left hand was trembling, right? And he was touching me, and I wasn't really responding to the touch. He's like, can you feel me touching you? He's like, you know, doing the needle test. And I wasn't really. He's like, is your hand? And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, sometimes. He's like, does your hand tremble? Does your hand tremble often? I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, isn't that, I'm like, it goes numb sometimes. And I'm like, isn't that normal? He's like, no, that's not normal. And I thought, because I thought it was just like, because I've always had like problems with my hands, like going numb and tingling. And he was like, that's not normal. And he made an emergency appointment to see a neurologist, because he's like, that's, and I was like, oh, is that possibly the concussion? He's like, no, it's not, because you said you've been having it for a while and concussions don't cause numbness in your hands. So he sent me to an emergency to he sent me he had I had an emergency consultation in neurologist. But while I was there, while I had the consultation in neurologist, he talked he started to mention cognition. So like I have dyslexia, as I had mentioned in the piece, and what I thought was the confusion. What the confusion that I was having when I was writing, this was during while I was at the setting school. I thought that maybe that was part of the dyslexia, because I'm like, okay, I'm getting older. Maybe this is just the dyslexia changing as I get older. And he sent me to do some tests, and he was like, you have, this is a, I wasn't officially diagnosed with the MS, but he's like, you're having cognition issues. And that's when I even really really got to understood the term cognition and cognitive, and the cognitive impairment hadn't come up yet. But that's when I started to realize, okay, so this confusion and this disorientation I'm having is not tied to the dyslexia. And then I had the 2.5 years of testing, and during that period they had sent me to another Dr. Lee, who's a specialist in MS. And what and he sent me to do some cognitive testing, and I did oh my, the test that you do, you know, where they test your eyes and your hearing and all of that. I did those, and then I saw a neuropsychiatrist. So the neuropsychiatrist is who diagnosed me with the cognitive impairment. And that's when I read, I he they explained what processing it, what like processing speed, you know. They talked to me, okay, your processing speed is below normal. And like they talked about my vocabulary, and they'll say you have an extremely large vocabulary, but sometimes you keep reusing the same words because your brain isn't able to remember all of the words that you know. So it goes for the most word, it goes for the easiest words that you can pull out. So that's when I started to really understand how cognitive impairment was affecting me. And that's when I was just like, okay, everything started to fall into place, because it is frustrating. Like it's very frustrating. especially when going through a cock fog episode. And for me is some for me now that I know what it is, and I'm able to identify it, it kind of it's not that it's not frustrating, but at least I know what it is that's causing it. Before I had the diagnosis, I just was just like thinking, okay, maybe I'm silly, and maybe, like, especially when I was in school, I'm like, maybe I'm stupid and I'm not getting the concepts that's being explained to me. And that's when it was more frustrating, because my teachers would explain, teachers like, you know what you're talking about, but it's just that it's not coming together. And I didn't know why everything wasn't coming together. But after I had the diagnosis, that's when, okay. And I could forgive myself for not getting things as quickly as I knew I could have gotten them. Right. So that was my main challenge with the cognitive impairment, just like not feeling like an idiot, basically.
Yeah, it must have been perhaps a relief to hear that there was a valid explanation behind what you were experiencing. Had you like heard of MS before you were diagnosed, or did you know anyone who had MS, or was this completely a whole new world for you?
No, I had known about MS. I had known about it for years. Before I moved to Canada, I'm Barbadian, so I moved to Canada in 2009. But before I had moved here, just like years ago when I was younger, one of my mom's friends, she had been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. So I knew about it, and I knew about it from reading books and stuff, because I used to love reading like biology books and like human anatomy books. I would watch a lot of medical shows just for fun. That's just me. I'd watch like Discovery Health and all of those, and a lot of these Australian medical health shows just for the fun of it. So I knew about MS before, and while during the two and a half years of testing, and my when I just before one of the my second neurologist, he has said the pot where the we're possibly looking at a diagnosis of MS. And so like we I knew it was a possibility, because so he said it to like prepare me. He's just like, just so he's like, it's looking more and more, but I'm not going to really confirm until we do some more tests, because some of my symptoms weren't normal, and like because also I didn't have the scarring on my spine, on the spinal column. I had all of my scarring was in my brain at the time. So he didn't really want to confirm it, but then after a while he was like, yeah, we're gonna confirm that it is MS. And I was kind of prepared, but kind of not, because hearing it is it was a relief. But my brain kind of did that thing, you know, when you're watching a film and like all the sound just disappears, and like you see the person talking, but here my brain literally did that. I literally did, like, I saw him talking, and my brain just like completely went, everything went completely silent. And then it took me like he stopped, and I remember watching his face and seeing his face, and he stopped for like a minute. He just looked at me. And then like my hair, I could hear everything come back, and he was, are you okay now? And it was just, I'm like, he's like, what did I tell you? He's like, you told me I have MS. He's like, okay, yes, you got, he's like, and like, he's like, you, he's like, we've discussed this and we talked about the possibility of it. And it did take me like a really long time to even acknowledge that I was not acknowledged, but to even realize that I would be considered disabled. Right. And it wasn't that I was in denial about the disability, but I just somehow didn't think the term applied to me. But then, like someone, like one of the nurses, one, she's like, "You have what's considered an invisible disability, right? Because I don't need a walking aid, and like all of my symptoms, like the hand tremors and stuff, you won't know unless you look at me really closely. The only time that I have like really visible symptoms are like sometimes, like when it's affecting my legs, my legs do some, my feet sometimes go numb, or like I lose my balance, and that's when I trip a lot." And or I start to like those are the more visible symptoms. Or if I'm tired, then I have to sit. I have no choice but to sit, right? But it's so like that's this is what 2017, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. So this is like 6 years, and I'm still learning what it means to live with MS.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because like the symptoms, the one symptom stress kind of pushed you or like directed you. I'm not gonna say pushed, but directed you from one career as a paralegal into what you're doing now, which is what you love as a film critic and a writer and a podcaster and a YouTuber. But at the same time, in your story, you talk about how the cognitive impairment impairs your ability to do your job. So I'm sure there are people watching who've had MS impact their ability to work. And as you mentioned, this is an invisible disability. So could you talk a little bit about how you handle your MS in the context of work? Like, do you speak with your employer about your disability? Are accommodations made? Like, how does that look for you?
So I'll kind of answer that in two parts, because right now I'm working as a freelancer, but before the pandemic, I was working for the TDSB, for the Toronto District Public School. I was working at a public school as a lunchroom supervisor. And what that meant for me was, sometimes if it was having a relapse or if it was having a flare up, I would sit down. I couldn't stand, or like, you know, like my legs would start to hurt me, my legs would cramp, especially in the school period, just before summer, when it started to get warm. I would have issues like standing or walking or holding things. So I would explain to my I explained to my to the principal, who's essentially my boss. I would say, okay, I'm starting to feel weird, and that might mean that I might have to sit down, and, you know, like, or I can't hold like the trays or stuff for the kids, like with for their lunches and stuff, or I might need help getting something open. So I would explain that to the principal, and they'd understand, and the other lunchroom supervisors and the teachers, they knew, they understood. So like that was, for me, that was it, right? And like, everyone was very understanding stuff. But as a freelancer, as a writer in particular, what I do is, when I'm writing for a new editor, I let the editor know, okay, I have MS, but I also have dyslexia, and I have cognitive impairment. So what that means for me is, like, when I'm sending an article, when I'm sending a piece, the grammar sometimes might not be up to par. Like, I might miss, like, I like I my one of my main issues is like punctuations. Like, it may seem like a small thing, but it's actually it's a pretty significant thing, where sometimes I miss punctuation marks. Or, you know, my spelling is off, and like, I'll explain it. I'm like, okay, so you might there I might miss some grammatical errors, and I'm like, it's not that I'm being careless with my writing, and I'm not thinking, I'm not being careful with what I'm trying to say. It's just that my brain literally does not process these grammatical errors. You know, it doesn't process everything, and like, the syntax might sound weird or strange, and sometimes I don't notice it until like I'm reading it back, like, and the editors will understand, and they will send back like their edits and their notes, and then I'll read it, and then I'm like, okay, I see where I made the mistake, and I'll see where this sentence didn't really make sense, or I'll see the mistakes. And that's dealing with editors. And but then for me personally, just writing sometimes can take a really long time. For my writing style, I don't really do short form writing, which is like what you would call like capsule reviews. Like, for me, my writing is more like article or feature, so I do like pretty long pieces, and for me it can take a long time. So I might ask for like maybe a week or 2 weeks to turning a piece, depending on if there isn't like a deadline or an embargo. But during that time, it just means that I can't, sometimes for me is that I can't focus on writing. Like, writing literally, like right now, since this January, I've been actually having what I call a prolonged cognitive fog episode. So I haven't been able to do as much writing as I want to, because writing is literally very difficult for me. Reading is very difficult for me. And so that's how it's been affecting me more recently. Like, I just have not been able to write as much as I want, because it's impossible. It's almost physically impossible, or cognitively impossible. And I'll give an example. So I've been working on a piece, and I sent it into the editor, and that piece took me probably 2 days to write. And normally I can write a piece in like a half a day, depending on how many words. But that took me like 2 days, and I had to take breaks while I was writing. I had to go and focus on something else, because just focusing on that was like messing me up. And so that's how it is. But then it's just like, I had to come to the realization like early this week, I'm just like, I can't do anymore. I told my editors, I'm like, I can't do any more writing. I have like two pieces to turning, and those are going to be it for a while. Like, I plan to take a vacation at the end of March and in April from writing. I'm only going to write a piece if it's like something I really, 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 really want to do. If it's worth it. But I told myself, I can't do this. I just can't. My brain just can't handle it. And so that's where I've come. That's where I'm still learning how to live with cognitive impairment. I'm still learning how to give myself breaks, and giving myself my own self accommodations, and saying, Carolyn, you can't do it. It's okay not to do it, right? And so I, when I talk to people, I always tell them I'm learning. It's a learning process. 6 years and I'm still learning.
Yeah, it sounds like, you have to kind of look out for yourself first, set those boundaries, protect your physical and your mental health. And I'm happy to hear that you're going to be taking a vacation. It sounds like you worked very hard and well deserved, and I think your body will thank you for it. So, are you going anywhere, or is it just
Thank
a
you.
full on staycation?
I'm going home to Barb. I'm going home to Barbados in April.
Oh.
And I'm so excited because the last time I went to home to Barbados was in 2016. So I haven't been home in a really long time. And I'm just looking forward to the beach and this and the food. And the thing is like for the MS and for the cognitive fog, one of my other triggers is weather, because I was also diagnosed with SADAR, seasonal associative disorder. So that triggers the cognition, and it also triggers depression. So I've been having a really bad, I've been having really bad depression since December, and I had COVID as well. I had COVID
Oh my gosh.
in December. So I also think that actually triggered the I actually think that triggered the cognitive fog episode, because it was really bad, especially in January. It was like January. Even my sister was telling me, she's like, I noticed that you've been struggling more than normal. So like January was really, really bad, and February was a bit easier, but the weather was kind of like messing with me too. And I'm a bit better this week. This week has been better because we've been having more sun in Scarborough in Canada. Like, it's been dreary as heck here, so that really was making things difficult. But I'm very happy to be going home to the sun and sea. So I think things will definitely be better once I give myself a break. I needed a break. This pandemic has not been easy.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And yeah, we're in the same place. So the last couple of days, for folks watching, the GTA, the Greater Toronto Area, has been blanketed in fog, which is very unusual. So not only was it gray and dreary and wet, but you couldn't see anything. It was a difficult. Yeah, it's been a tough winter. So I'm happy to hear you'll be traveling. That sounds really well.
Yeah, I'm so happy.
So, what made you want to share your story as part of the 31 Days of MS campaign?
What made me want to share it? Because a lot of people I don't think don't understand MS and don't understand some of the symptoms, particularly the cognitive impairment. As a like one of the things that I do very often, I'm always on social media, particularly Twitter. Like that is part of my work as a critic. Like I do a lot of like I use Twitter to like promote my work, and and also to find work. I find a lot of connections through Twitter, but then it's also a way for me to socialize with people, because especially since the pandemic, I've been very isolated, just being at home, because my sister works or she works in her office. Oh, so I've been using Twitter more to talk about disability and talking more about MS, not only just to inform people, but also to get me more open about talking about it. And so that's why I wanted to, like, when Rochelle asked me to write just the piece for 31 Days of MS, like I would she because we know each other from Twitter. So she's also the only other Black woman I know who has MS. So like that's another thing I wanted to share, the perspective of as a Black woman with MS, because when being honest, like when you look at the media covering MS, it's usually centers white people. So that was also part of it for me, just like people see MS is this disease that affects people of color, and it affects Black women as well, and just like to see how we ourselves live with the symptoms and our experiences with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's another reason why I'm so glad that you're on this live, because you're like actually like literally giving a face to your story, which is really great. I want to circle back to the comment that you made about media representation. So in your role as a film critic, as a commentator on a lot of pop culture, and as someone who identifies with an invisible disability, and also a person of color, like, have you seen your story or a story like yours represented in any of the media that you've written about? And if you have, what was that like? And if you haven't, would you agree that that's like a gap in media?
I first thing first, MS is not a disease that is very often mentioned in media at all. And like for instance, if you talk about it for medical shows, MS is, I've only seen MS mentioned twice that I can recall in a medical show or on TV. One is a show called Pearson, and the woman that did have MS, it was a white woman, but it was just like when it was said, oh my gosh, she has MS, I was like, oh my God, it's a woman with MS. Like, that was that. And then the other time was on a Korean drama where and it's two, and the drama is two seasons, and the reason why that drama always is one of my favorites is as they were going through his diagnosis process, like the show was 16 episodes, but like as he started to talk about, like he was self-diagnosing because he's a doctor, right? And like as he started, as the series went on, they were covering the symptoms, and I'm like, wait, I have that. I have that symptom. I'm like, wait. And before it even came to them, I'm like, wait, does he have MS? Then lo and behold, at the end, it's just like, oh wait, he's diagnosed with MS. And it was just like, it blew my mind. Cause again, this was again the second time I seen someone with MS on a TV show, but then also the fact that I was able to relate in the fact that he had the same symptoms that I had. And just that was just like a very, that was a kind of a surreal experience, because it was like, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm here diagnosed with this thing because it's the same symptoms. But like MS is not covered in on media, period. And black women, no. Right? Because I said the first one was a white woman, the second one is a Korean man in a K-drama. And so we don't get to see, I whether it's a for black women who look like me or for other races, like there's just no coverage. There's just no acknowledgement of MS as a disease. And it's funny thing because in Canada, I think from what I remember from reading statistics, some of the highest concentrations of people with MS is in Canada. We have some of the, I think it's about, well, 1 million or 2 million people diagnosed with MS, and that's one of the highest concentrations of MS globally. And I've never seen anything on Canadian media. I could be wrong because I haven't really seen much Canadian media, but I'm just like, I don't recall seeing anything on any medical dramas. You don't really see it much on the news. And then again, talking about MS, and when you get the medical materials, the people that are on the medical, on the like the magazines and the brochures, you know, the cover, the commercials for the medications, they're all white people, right? So that's for me another important thing that we do need like proper representation of all the varying people who are affected by MS represented in the media for MS and in media in general.
I know so many people with MS. It's probably the most common diagnosis in my own social circle. And yet you're right, it's not in any television shows or movies. And you're right about the advertising. It's always totally just white faces that you see in advertising. So your point is really well taken. What would it mean to you to see, even if it's not like a story about the person's life with MS, but just a character with MS in the media, or to see someone who looks like you in an advertisement for a treatment or something like that, what would that mean to you?
It would, to me, it would just be like super cool in general to see anyone, to see MS acknowledged as a disease, and the different types of these and the different ways it can program to can represent. Because I feel like if we were to talk about MS, people would only talk about you know, the mobility issues, like being unable to walk. So they'll more than likely talk about someone needed a mobility aid. And we do need representation for that. But then, like, there's people like me who at the moment don't need mobility aids, but we do have things like cognitive impairment. So people have hearing loss. Like, I have hearing loss from because of the scarring, and we do need to see that there are people with these this with conditions that are considered invisible disabilities to be acknowledged. Because even I think in the disability community, like, I could be wrong, but I don't think people with invisible disabilities are acknowledged the way we should be. Because like one of my worst experiences, I went to San Diego Comic Con, and I was covering it as press, and I went there in line with my friend Esther, who's also has an invisible disability, and we were in the line to get our badges. So they get when you at San Diego Comic Con, they give you a special, like this little special gold badge to put on your own, on your press badge and stuff to show that you are in the disability community so that you can get accommodations, like, for instance, that you get special access in lines, and you get, like, there's, like, you know, like, sitting in sessions for chairs designated for people with disabilities. And I remember my friend, it was me, my friend Esther, and my friend Laura's husband, who was basically, he is, like, licensed to be, like, a caregiver for people with disabilities, and he was going to be our companion while we were walking around Comic-Con and stuff. So he'd take turns either be with me or be with Esther, and he was in the line with us, and one of the people there were like, and I heard, and like, they didn't say to me, but like, Esther and I, we heard someone mention that, it was like, but there's nothing wrong with them, right? And like, that happened, and it happened more than once, and I remember I still get upset thinking about it, because it happened, like, I went to SI in 2018 and 2019, and the same everything happened both years. And I remember I was at an event, I was at a conference, and I was, and I was going to sit in the chair for the chair for in the designated section, and one of the people working there, he asked me to show me his badge, right, to show him my badge. And I remember the girl that was next to me says he didn't ask me to show him my badge. Mind you, this is a white girl, but is also, she had a mobility aid, right? So, and she was like, he didn't ask me to show him my badge. And that made me feel so bad, because I'm, and the thing that was, that made it feel, that thing is that my legs were bothering me that day, right? Like, my legs were like cramping, because it was really hot, it was cramping, and like, they were going numb, and I needed to sit. And I just felt so bad. I'm just like, wow. Have people with visible disabilities, like, we kind of like still have to prove our disability to people that are supposed to be there to help us. And it, as I said, it happened both years, and it has happened to me like different places. Like, I'd be on the train and with my sister, and like, my sister would, she's my twisted sister, so she instinctively knows when something's wrong. And we'd be standing, and there, a seat would open, and she'd give me the seat. And more than once, someone has looked at us and be like, why is she giving her seat? Like, she should be able to stand. And, you know, like, those kind of things happen. And, like, we do need that proper, I think, that representation of invisible physical disabilities. Because when you talk about invisible disabilities, you might talk about someone who's deaf, you know, or, you know, or someone who has, like, a heart condition and that, and that kind of stuff. But I think for, like, there are invisible physical disabilities, like the fact that with MS, like I said, like, we're not able to stand or walk for very long periods of time. Like, our legs can be cramping and starting to go numb, and that's a problem too, but we don't see that kind of representation discussed in media. So that's kind of like one of my things. I kind of went on really long over there. Sorry about that. Sorry.
No, that was actually kind of the point I was driving at. And it's unfair, because you shouldn't have to walk around explaining yourself to everyone. You shouldn't have to have something with you, like a mobility device, to let people know that you have a disability. Like, it's an unfair burden to place on someone who already has a burden. So I think your point is really well taken, and it's definitely something that we as a society, we need to catch up in that area. Just comes out of judgment and ignorance, but at this point, it's like totally unacceptable. So thank you for making that point. Carolyn, it's been a real pleasure talking to you tonight. Thank you so much for talking more about your story and for being here. And again, for everyone watching, Carolyn's story was published on day 10 on multiplesclerosisnewstoday.com. Carolyn, I'm going to let you go, but again, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. I know I'm joining late. Again, apologies. Technology is my immortal nemesis. I'm always having it out with tech. But again, thank you so much for having me, and for giving me the grace to start later than we were scheduled to.
Anytime. You were more than worth it, Carolyn. Thank you so much.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to Multiple Sclerosis News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.multiplesclerosisnewstoday.com, and be sure to follow us on social media and join our Multiple Sclerosis News Today forums. A trusted MS community ready to welcome you anytime.